From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Following the clearance of rockside debris, the Basin Road trestle is now open to pedestrian traffic. However, due to damage from the side, the trestle and upper basin remain closed to vehicle traffic until further notice. Trail users should be aware that parking on Upper Basin Road will be unavailable until repairs are complete. And Governor Mike Dunleavy announced the winners of the fourth annual education raffle on Wednesday from Harborview Elementary School in Juneau. Alaskans enter the raffle by donating part of their permanent fund dividend. Half of the donated money goes directly to schools in the form of grants. A quarter goes into an education endowment fund. Dunleavy said more than 8,700 people entered the raffle this year.
437,000 will go directly to school districts. 218,500 will go into the education endowment.
The four winners were Hannah Palmeter, John Erickson, Charles Green, and Suzanne Taylor. Their prizes range from $7,000 to $56,000. And Juneau artist Crystal Worrell and her brother Rico put Klinget Formlight art on a lot of things: playing cards, clothes, umbrellas, and temporary tattoos. Rico was the first Klinget artist to be featured on a stamp. Now it's Crystal's turn. A forever stamp with one of her Formline skateboard designs is coming out this spring. Juneau artist Crystal Worrell says the Postal Service's art director was most drawn to her salmon designs, and she was fine with that.
I'm always down to do a salmon. I'm from the Tsukahari clan, the salmon sockeye clan, and so I'm glad people, it seems appropriate, you know, and I never get bored of drawing it in a different way.
She says her brother's experience showed her the power of having Klinget art on a stamp. In 2021, the Postal Service released his design of Raven bringing light to the world, holding the sparkly golden sun in his mouth.
He kept receiving fan mail with the stamps on it because of the stamps, like postcards from all over using his stamp and just saying thank yous. And I thought that was really, really cool that that happened.
She had to work in several art forms to arrive at the final design: 5 different form line sketches of salmon, and then a digital piece with different color options. Finally, they sent her a skateboard, and she painted the salmon design on it. Worrell said it was cool they wanted the physical object painted.
They could have used that digital design to superimpose over the artwork, but they wanted an original.
The Postal Service then photographed the skateboard being held up by a model, and that picture is going on the stamps. Worrell has tackled big projects before, like her Native American Heritage Month design for Google, a massive mural in downtown Anchorage, and an ambulance that's driving around Juneau every day. But she says this is the first time she's worked with an organization that had little knowledge of formline art.
I definitely had a challenging moment trying to fulfill USPS's expectations of what they wanted of my art and my style. I just had to backtrack and like elaborate and explain the ABCs of formline design.
She says she can't wait to see the stamps in person.
Yeah, and it's always like a really satisfying thing when you spend all this time designing something and it's finally finished and you get to hold it in your hand and just like realize the extensive process you went through and communication you did with a collab and a team to get to this one tiny little sticker.
The stamp comes out in March. She's hoping to sell them at her and her brother's store. And the U.S. Transportation Department announced this week that it's approved grants totaling $285 million to upgrade and modernize Alaska's ferry system. The money comes mostly from programs Senator Lisa Murkowski added to last year's bipartisan infrastructure bill. But the award to Alaska is larger than even she expected.
I'm so happy. I'm just so happy. And as I mentioned, let's not mess this up, right?
The concern about messing it up is because the federal money will require the state to put up matching funds totaling more than $100 million, and then support new ferries and facilities with operating and maintenance funds. The State Department of Transportation applied for the grants and asserted that it's committed to providing the match. But Governor Mike Dunleavy did not show the ferry system much love in his first term. He cut the Alaska Marine Highway System's budget, sold the state's 2 fast ferries for a fraction of their cost, and vetoed $17 million to retrofit the Alaska-class ferries. He also idled and then sold the Malaspina rather than pay millions of dollars for repairs. Murkowski says she's spoken to the governor and the state Senate Finance Co-Chair, Bert Stedman, about the need to spend state dollars to get the federal grants.
It's going to take some money, but it's worth the investment.
Alaska was awarded about 75% of the federal money available for ferries this year. This is the first of five funding years in the infrastructure law. Late Thursday, the governor's deputy press secretary said by email that Dunleavy's office will evaluate all options for the state match. Money already appropriated could be used for some of the match, she said. And a nationwide outbreak of the H5N1 strain of avian influenza is disrupting the Alaska supply of eggs, but the disease's impacts stretch far beyond the grocery store. With millions of migratory birds flying to Alaska this spring, understanding how the avian flu spreads in wild bird populations and the risks to human health and ecosystems is essential. KBBI's Sean McDermott reports.
Last week in Homer, the refrigerated egg section at Save You More was lit, but completely bare. Sitting in the deli, manager Mark Hemstreet describes a situation that is becoming familiar around Alaska. There simply aren't any eggs. Hemstreet says that Costco is Save You More's main supplier and sources most of its eggs for Alaska from Washington State. With Washington's rise in cases of avian influenza in recent weeks, including a farm where over 1 million birds were culled, egg deliveries have been limited.
We used to get about a pallet 4 or 5 feet high of eggs 3 times a week. And now they'll give us, if they're available, just 2 packages of each variety.
Hemstreet says there's a similar story with the store's other vendor.
But the Super Value supplier has increased their costs, so we've had to, you know, match it here.
Nationally, egg prices have gone up 60%. Cases of the highly pathogenic H5N1 strain surfaced in the U.S. in March of last year and have impacted nearly every state. Over 58 million domestic birds are dead. Amber Betts, spokesperson for the Washington State Department of Agriculture, says controlling its transmission is difficult.
So with every case that we've seen, we've determined that there's been some sort of interaction or introduction via wild bird.
H5N1 is very contagious and can spread through exposure to ponds and food sources that might be shared with wild bird species.
It's devastating just all around. It's devastating for the flock owners. It's devastating for our veterinarians. It's a taxing virus for everyone, including the birds.
In Alaska, state veterinarian Bob Gerlach says there have only been 5 domestic flocks infected so far, but that could change with the seasonal migration of millions of wild birds this spring.
It's really important to go ahead and try to keep our awareness that this is going to be probably a long-term problem that we're going to be dealing with.
A warming Arctic may make wild bird populations more susceptible to avian influenza because of stress from other factors, he says. Climate change is already altering food availability for some migrating birds, for example, which Gerlach says makes understanding environmental pressures along their flyways even more important.
The health of the animal can impact the health of the environment, and the health of the environment and the animal can impact public health. So it's all interconnected.
Falk Hoopman is a professor of wildlife ecology at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He says focusing primarily on mortality in poultry leaves big gaps in understanding how and why avian flu outbreaks occur.
You need ecological perspectives that includes climate change in this. If you don't have it, in my view, it's my personal opinion, it's 80% that we're missing about avian influenza.
Since wild birds can carry multiple strains of avian flu without necessarily showing symptoms, Hoopman says it's difficult to pinpoint or forecast how the virus might mutate or become more pathogenic.
In terms of these mutations, nobody knows when they happen. I mean, it's like a time bomb.
Even the term avian flu is an oversimplification for a disease that can infect many different species, he says. Researchers, for example, have found avian influenza in animals ranging from farmyard horses and pigs to seals and whales. In Alaska and Montana, even bears have recently tested positive for H5N1. That jump into mammals is something researchers are watching closely. In early January, a European study found a slightly mutated strain of H5N1 on a mink farm in Spain, which researchers suspect came from interactions with wild birds. World virologists are concerned because the virus has acquired a new mutation that allows it to more easily spread from mammal to mammal, a change making it more likely human-to-human transmission could occur in the future. In the coming months, Homer will see a huge influx of migratory birds, and Gerlach advises Alaskans to stay informed about avian flu.
We know from looking at the wild bird populations that it's not over, and it seems to be that there's going to be a risk come spring.
Back at Save You More, Hemstreet says he doesn't see a simple solution for egg supplies in the near future, And while he's always excited to source eggs locally, he knows it's a tough time for people to part with them. Reporting in Homer, I'm Sean McDermott.
You're listening to KTOO.